Life Committee. And today with us, we have joining Commissioners Michael Gongora and Commissioner Vice Chair Commissioner Minor. And of course, we have Commissioner Samulin joining us as well. I'm going to make a quick announcement. If you'd like to join the webinar via Zoom, the Zoom code is 863-8442-0078. Or you can call us at 888-475-4499. Members of the public wanting to speak on an item during the meeting must click the raise hand icon if using Zoom app, or press star 9 on the telephone to raise their hand. And with that, Eric, do you have any announcements for us before we continue to the items?
No, sir, Madam Chair. We are we're good to go with the neighborhood, our first virtual neighborhoods meeting.
All right. It's not a long one, but that doesn't stop us from talking, though. Okay, item number one, we're going to take up. Old business will go in order. It's Commissioner Minor's item, discussion regarding possible ways to improve homeless in Miami Beach. Commissioner Minor.
Yeah, well, this is an older item. I thought it's always timely, unfortunately, and especially some of the events going on with COVID. Homeless has been a big topic of discussion. And I see Maria pop up on the screen, so maybe if Maria could take it from here, and then we can have any follow-up questions, if anybody has any follow-up questions.
Good morning, everyone. I think one of the challenges of dealing with homelessness, period, is that every community is very different, and our populations that we have to face in the homeless arena is very different. We've been very blessed that because we are such a geographically defined and contained area, we're able to collect a tremendous amount of data about our homeless. We also couple that great data collection with probably more resources per capita than most other cities can possibly offer. And so we're very fortunate that whenever there's someone wants shelter, chances are shelter is available. In fact, this morning in one shelter alone, I have 13 beds available. In most other places of the country, the shelters would be at capacity right now. We rarely are at capacity. And when we are at capacity, it's typically because there's a cold weather front or there's a unique situation that happens, with the exception of COVID. COVID is that exception that does not play to the normal rules. So we never really reached capacity except for one day. And that the very next day, people walked out. So that's a unique attribute that is very unique to our community. The other aspect of our homeless population, which is really important, is that the vast majority of our homeless never lived or worked in the city of Miami Beach prior to presenting themselves as homeless in our community. And that's the inverted opposite of what it's like in most other places of the country, where the vast majority of people had some connection to the community, became homeless, and then remained in the community. So that's another, again, statistical abnormality that occurs with our population. During this COVID time, in addition to shelter assistance, we also continue to provide relocation assistance. We continued also to provide COVID prevention information. We provided masks that the staff here at Homeless made for the homeless. And in the last 3 weeks, we've been providing food cards for the homeless. Interestingly enough, while for the most part through April, the first week in April, first, second week in April, our homeless population stayed steady at 118 people. Subsequent to the start of the food distribution, and I'm not saying that they're correlated, although I would argue at another point, we went up 41%. So we have close to 180 homeless people in our city today. We're not seeing the same amount of faces. We're seeing a lot of people that recently came over from Miami. In fact, we've been trying to run HMIS on as many of the new faces as possible. The vast majority have received services in the city of Miami and found themselves coming over to our community. We did 8 placements between Monday and Tuesday, and I've got plenty of placement availability today. One of the things that I was hoping I could try to stress during this conversation is that when we're trying to solve a problem, whether it's any problem, you always want to take into account the factor, what defines the problem. And what a lot of people, I think, do when they talk about the homeless problem in this country is that we're looking at it through the lens of our experience and our values and what we think is right. And what I think one of the things we have to be conscientious of is that everyone who walks into this office seeking assistance doesn't have the same values and thoughts that we do. They don't have the same life experience. They don't have the same perceptions. And their perception of what is right or what is appropriate or what is humane may not necessarily equate to our definition. And I say this because over the past 2 months, our staff has engaged our homeless community in a way that has never been done before. We've gotten an opportunity to actually get names because we partnered with the police department to try to encourage these people to accept shelter. So we were able to get more data about our homeless population than most cities have the opportunity to do so. And what is significant is not only the number of people who decline shelter, because obviously they remain on the streets today, but it's the fact that they presume, that we presume on them that shelter or housing is the best option. That's not necessarily true. We have a video of a gentleman who we had approached who was living near a bridge. And when we asked him if he wanted shelter, he said no. And when we asked, well, why don't you want shelter? He waved his hand and showed the bridge and the view. And he said, I've got this for free. You can't match it. And I think it's important as we go forward and we look at solutions that we respect and honor the opinions and values of the people we're trying to serve. Because I don't think we have done that institutionally anywhere, not at the federal level, not at the state level, not at the local level. And I think we need to do that because there's a significant number of people who are homeless in our community that are okay with it. They're willing to accept that condition. And at some point, we have to honor that in America, everybody has a right to do what they think is best. From a service perspective, our community can offer shelter. We have a new job developer who's coming on board in July to help them find jobs if that's what they desire. We have an addiction treatment program through in partnership with Miami Beach Community Health Center to provide them addiction treatment services in an outpatient format. We have mental health counseling that we can connect to several providers. We try to reconnect people to family. There's so many services that we are offering, and the fact that we're still able to serve those who want help, and we do an excellent job at it. I think at some point we have to maybe recalibrate how we define the people that remain on the streets that don't wish to have services. And I think that's going to be the more productive conversation going forward, especially in the COVID, because here we had in a situation that people staying on the streets were risking their lives, their health, their well-being. And then conversely, the health and well-being of those that passed by them for that matter. And yet they chose not to accept services. It's counterintuitive. You'd think, oh, there's a shutdown. There's a stay-at-home order. And in a hurricane, people would grab their things, go to shelter, and then walk right back out. But during this pandemic, that's not what occurred. And I think that's a great learning lesson for us in understanding the population and also in trying to devise strategies going forward. And that's, I think, my quick brief summary. And I know, Commissioner, you might have some questions for me.
Thank you. Commissioner Minor.
I have a couple. I'll ask a couple of questions. I see Commissioner Gongora is also raising his hand. But you mentioned an increase from 118 to 180. I think you said what's your thought on that? Why that happened?
So I'm not a scientist, and we haven't had that data driving that gives me the understanding. What I do know is that the increase, that 41% are all from the city of Miami. That we've been able to document. So there's the only thing that changed, because the pandemic was consistent. We had a curfew. It was consistent. The only thing that changed was we started to offer gift cards. The only factor that changed was the gift cards. And since those gift cards, we immediately saw the steady increase in the number of people in our city. There is something to be said about what other communities have found in that with the more entitlements that were offered, the greater the incline of the number of people seeking those services. So I'm not saying that one equals the other. What I'm saying is that the only attribute that has changed from a social perspective has been the giving of those cards. Nothing else has changed. The businesses didn't open. We didn't have a curfew change. We didn't have the stay-at-home order lifted. All of those things remain static. So the only factor that in fact changed was the fact that we were giving out free cards to anybody who declared themselves homeless.
Okay, thank you. And maybe this is a question more for the police department, but as far as the new ordinance is concerned about the homeless and the 50-foot rule, what's the plan there as far as enforcing that?
I don't know if the police department is on, so I...
I haven't seen one.
Chief, are you on?
Yes, he is. Rick, Chief Clemens, please unmute.
Yes, I unmuted.
Good morning.
I'm sorry, I had someone in my office, but I think you talked about the 50-foot rule or how we're going to deal with that question. When we were asked about this and when we started talking about where the homeless are congregating, during these times where everything is closed down, we noticed that there were locations that involved either food distribution or food preparation, and obviously what Maria said is 100% accurate. We've been hitting the streets hard trying to get people placed, but they don't want to be placed. And I think they'd rather take their chances outside these establishments. And I also know that there were people who came forward and said that they were somewhat intimidated because when they came out of these locations, there were people there and that they were aggressively panhandling. I think it's something that we can use to be able to get people to move along, that are more or less so loitering outside those locations. And if they refuse to leave and we catch them panhandling, then at that point in time, we can go to a different level of enforcement, if you will. OK, which is the arrest. It's not just a warning anymore. When I talked to Bull Hall, who's been out there with Maria's crew as well, he's indicated that people are starting to get more aggressive. The homeless are starting to get more aggressive as it pertains to, their needs, if you will. So I think this is one way in order to be able to offset that aggressiveness and to be able to, at least if nothing else, give people the opportunity to be able to go into establishments without being confronted outside when they exit. Again, I didn't catch the first part of the question.
No, you got it.
Commissioner Gongora? You have to unmute.
I'm on my phone today, so I'm dealing with different technology. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Minor, for putting this on, because unfortunately, homelessness is always an issue, and it just has morphed now during the pandemic. And Maria, I have enjoyed this intelligent conversation and potential explanation as to why we're seeing increasing numbers. One of the things that I was concerned about when the commission gave the manager direction to include panhandling in the emergency order was that what are we gonna do for the people that are hungry? And you've now correlated perhaps using of these cards and the increase in the amount of homeless. I don't know if that's true or not true, that they maybe were becoming an attractive nuisance for them. Sorry, this is very complicated in your phone for people at home. People that are watching, that are texting me and calling me, please stop because you're bouncing me out of the Zoom program. Maria, one of the things that the city is starting is we're starting the food distribution programs in South Beach and North Beach. Will homeless people be able to obtain food as part of that program?
Good morning, Commissioner. Anyone that presents themselves with an ID that shows a Miami Beach address right now are the ones that we are servicing. The homeless are getting food cards daily in values of $5. So they're being fed, but through a different process. They can purchase prepared meals as opposed to people who are homeless have to cook their meals with the ingredients that we provide.
So we're still providing, I guess really my question is, if we're coming up with a different method of enforcing against panhandling, are we also providing a way for the homeless to get fed?
I couldn't hear the last part of your sentence.
Are we providing a method for homeless to have access to food?
Yes, we are providing food cards. And in fact, there was an incident with the homeless at the Dunkin' Donuts on South Beach. And as a result of that, we decided to change vendors so that problem didn't persist. So now we're providing cards in addition to Burger King. So we have Burger King and Dunkin' Donuts cards that we're able to give the homeless so they can choose which is the vendor they prefer.
And how do they access those?
Our staff is going out into the street to be able to provide it, and people are also able to come to our office. Okay. So there's two ways.
Thank you. And I've asked before, but what about masks? masks? Are we also distributing masks to the homeless?
I know that we have some more masks waiting for us. We have to go pick them up. Marsha advises that it's there, so we have to go get them, but we'll start distributing them as soon as we pick them up. We're just a little short staffed with food distribution today, but we will be picking them up and start distributing again. But just for the record, we distributed multiple masks to all of the homeless last month. So we made those masks and we distributed those masks.
Thank you. Also, in your, I assume you were, your office prepared the item that's in the agenda. One of the things that's highlighted is that the office provides some kind of down payment rental assistance to homeless people. Is that correct?
We have actually our first person who's about to become a homeowner who was homeless, who is hopefully going to be closing on her unit later this month.
That's good. I like hearing these success stories. Yeah. We should highlight that at a later date.
Yeah.
But I'm going to kind of pivot on this, and I placed an item on the agenda for discussion on Friday for the full commission. But we started the rent assistance program with your office, and I was happy to sponsor it. And it was so popular that we had to shut it down on the first day. And I'm really concerned about this. This is, you know, very bad that we kind of open a program that we have to close immediately and appears underfunded. What is the city doing in order to identify funds to allow for more rental assistance or to be able to reopen the program for all those that haven't qualified thus far or been able to get an appointment?
Well, I know, sir, that our office found $271,000 that we're going to be coming to commission for to be able to, in essence, swap out old money for new so that we can apply this money towards rent assistance. And that's $271,000. We've mined all of the other ways to try to come up with more money. And quite frankly, in our house, we don't have any more. I know that the administration is actively looking. I know that we're vetting grant opportunities daily to try to see if we can access any funds that way. I think that the short answer is that right now the need is greater than any resource that's out there, but we continue to try to find ways to fill that void. Hopefully that $271,000 will come online in 3 weeks. I know it's not today, but it's as quickly as we can turn it around under federal guidelines to make sure that we do the public comment and all of the things required to convert that money for a different use.
Okay, because that's one of the challenges I'd like to give you between today and Friday is come back and identify for the commission what we can do to make sure that those that were not able to get appointments on the very first day of the program have some access to funding and then let the commission vote it up or down. But I think it's important for us on Friday to know how much money we need to have a successful program, potential pools of money, and what we can do to make this program more of a success.
Mr. Commissioner, I know that one of the big issues that we have is that many of the people who have applied for assistance aren't eligible under our funds because they don't have legal residence. And that is going to be an ongoing problem if the source is going to be a federal or state source. So I just want to make sure that at least 40% of the people who are currently in our food program have no legal status.
Mm-hmm. So they wouldn't qualify for the federal funds for rental assistance. And we need to do a good job of putting that message out, because I don't think that message came out in a strong way originally. And it's terrible, first of all, because I feel for those people. But if they don't qualify, then I would rather them not be taking up appointment space for perhaps people that do. Maybe there's a way they can get pre-qualified on the phone. We can do a better job of communicating the message so that the people that do qualify for the funds are able to access it.
Mr. Commissioner, part of the way process that was in place in order to provide a person an appointment is that we pre-screened them and we asked them, do you have a social security card? Do you have residency? Do you have a 3-day notice? Do you have a valid lease? We did pre-screen. A lot of people confuse temporary residency with the permanent residency. And that was one of the driving factors. Even though we tried our best to explain it to people, obviously, not everyone got that message clearly.
No, and I understand that. And by the way, I'm not faulting your office on this. I just want to make sure that we fix it. and try to make the program as successful as possible. So don't take my comments to be a criticism. They're not. I just am trying to figure out how we can work collaboratively to make the program work better and get people to access it. And I know the phones were flooded and you only have so many people. They had to send more employees to help at the call center to man this number. So unfortunately, it's a time we're living in where there's a lot of need for food, a lot of need for rental assistance, a lot of need for help. So I want to make sure that we're identifying and prioritizing that issue. And on Friday, please come back and give us more information on how we can do that. And then finally, I only have one more question, and it's directed, I guess, to the police chief. Commissioner Minor asked a little bit about how we're going to enforce this. Has anybody been arrested subject to this new panhandling emergency order?
I'm sorry, sir, you cut out the first part of your question. Sorry about that.
That's all right. I just asked.
I couldn't hear you the first part of your question.
Has anybody been arrested subject to the new panhandling emergency order?
No, sir, not yet.
All right. And it would be my hope that we don't, and that obviously we're able to use other methods to encourage enforcement. I don't think anybody on the commission passed this with the hope that people were going to get arrested. We're in the hope of maintaining law, order, and the safety of the residents that are out on the streets. Okay. Thank you.
Absolutely. I can tell you that since we've been able to go ahead and detach personnel to support Boha and obviously support Maria in our efforts to be able to get people off the street, the focus has been just that, and now make no mistake about it. When we've come across people that have created problems, we've dealt with those problems as best we can. And some of those instances have resulted in arrest, but these people that we've arrested have been the habitual offenders, have been the one that, have been committing acts of theft, if you will, and other types of acts that warrant concern for obviously our citizens. But the numbers of attempted placements are off the chain in terms of our interactions with people on a day-to-day basis. And the number of arrests are really minimal in comparison.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Commissioner Samuel. And I see you have your hand up.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Minor, for putting this item on the agenda. It's such an important topic. It's a number one opportunity that our community has identified through our community survey, and that was pre-COVID. I also appreciate the efforts of the administration, dealing with a vexing problem. We have had some discussions at finance as it particularly relates to a location for our housing services. And so we've had some of these discussions along this line. I have a couple areas I just want to explore. Maria and Chief, you both sort of touched on a couple trends. I heard about an uptick. I heard about a little more aggressiveness. And I'm just curious, if you look out at some of the trends, those included, what do you think we might be in for in the next few months? What should we be preparing for as it relates to the impact of COVID on our homeless population?
Maria, I'll defer to you first, obviously.
That's going to be an interesting call because I've tried to see if I can find some correlating data anywhere that could explain presumptively what we could see as trends. The first thing is that whereas a lot of homeless populations throughout the country have stayed stable, we've also witnessed that in places like Los Angeles, they made incredible efforts to acquire hotel rooms. And this week, half those rooms are empty, even though they're paid for. And I think we need to start looking at these situations and start seeing what did it mean? How does this translate to how we're going to deal with the problem at hand? At least in our short term, so many of the people that have come in to our city in this short period of time with that increase are all from the city of Miami. It'll be interesting to see why they came all the way here when they traditionally stayed in Miami. I know a lot of people there were three people that we spoke to that said the reason they're here is because the police in Miami forced them out. And the truth is that all communities are in a mode to try to protect their communities to the best of their abilities. The challenge is going to be understanding, and this is why I tried to defer to it earlier. The real challenge isn't homelessness as we define it. It's understanding homelessness as the homeless define it, because we have to find a solution that encourages them to say, homeless is not the way I want to be. This is not the lifestyle I choose to be in. And I think that that challenge going forward, the biggest single event that's going to help us with regards to understanding this problem is going to be the legal definition of when is a person homeless? Because if I offer you shelter and you chose not to take it legally, are you homeless? And I think that there might be some cases coming out of California that are going to challenge that, as well as here, but potentially in our community. So to me, I think that's going to be the single biggest benchmark or pivot point in the issue going forward.
Commissioner? Your mute button is on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maria, thank you for that helpful answer. Could you just talk a little more about that last point of the legal cases in California? Just give us a little more color on what's going on and when we might see some potential results on that and how it might impact us.
Certainly. The challenge that we're facing legally is right now, when a person says I'm homeless, the presumption and the burden is on them to just say that. There is no evidence of, okay, why are you homeless? The court just says a person is homeless, no fixed place to live. But in our community, every single person in this community who is homeless has been offered shelter and they've declined it. And the good news, I guess, from the pandemic piece is that most of those declinations now are either written, they formally refused our assistance, or it's on videotape. We videotape them saying, no, I don't want shelter, I don't want help. So the issue is going to be now, if I'm homeless and I declined my help and now I am trespassing on the beach when it's closed to the public, can I in fact find shelter in my status of saying I'm homeless? That's the new frontier when it comes to this, because nationwide there's been an unprecedented amount of resources devoted to the homeless. In terms of trying to get them from the streets into permanent housing, into transitional housing, and into employment programs. But that hasn't translated into a net decrease in the number of homeless. So at some point we have to say, well, you know what? Maybe these strategies aren't working. Maybe it's because we're defining the problem incorrectly. And I think that's what we're going to face. And the big question is going to be, at what point is a person truly homeless? Because if I offer you shelter under Pottinger, that caveat was if I offered you shelter. What happens now that now Pottinger's not in place and we still have a number of homeless in our community? How do we define that separation that says, okay, you're truly homeless and you are not, you're choosing to be homeless? Because you can't enforce a law with two rules. The law, two separate laws doesn't work. We found that in many other civil cases. So I think that's going to be the challenge going forward. And what's great for our community is that not only do we have shelter capacity to serve people, number one, but number two, the fact that we've gotten written declinations of service, most other communities don't do that. They take a person on their word. You don't want help, they walk away. We actually receive written confirmations and we videotape those who did not wish to sign the document. That's a great help for us.
I appreciate that. You mentioned and the memo describes some of the programs that we have. We have a lot of them. I just want to tee up three and maybe just get sort of a headline on what we're seeing, how it's working. The memo referenced the Lazarus outreach with medical treatment. In this past budget year, we funded more Marchman beds. There was a need for Marchman beds. We put incremental resources, and we've provided incremental resources to the Homeless Trust. Could you touch on, for those three specific, what we're seeing, what impact it's having, what else we could be doing along those lines?
I can speak to the Lazarus because the other two items I don't have any data on. But with regards to Lazarus, in the past year, two people have accepted shelter that are still in shelter. For many people, that's a success. For other people, if you're looking at it traditionally, it's just a statistical analysis. You see two people out of 13 people, you say, oh, it's not such a great success. Because these tend to be people with severe mental illness, you have to look at it through a different lens. And you have to say, look, this is a lot harder to serve. the service structure in this country for mental health services is very challenging. Getting an ex parte order is not a simple thing. There's a high threshold. So while two doesn't seem like a huge success, I have to say two is a huge success, because those are two people with severe mental illness that there is no other avenue by which to get them help and get them off the streets. So while the numbers are not great, sir, the fact that we got those two is a huge success.
Anything else, Commissioner?
And then, no, and just in terms of the Marksman beds or Homeless Trust, comments on those?
As you know, the Homeless Trust has been a little busy taking care of the pandemic. So I know that we haven't been able to collaborate very much on any of the things that we had scheduled because they switched gears. They're operating in response mode to the pandemic. And the portion of the funds that was for the Domestic Violence Board, they still haven't returned the contract to us. So that's a delay. I know there's just other things that have been more pressing, so we haven't gotten it back. So I don't have any data on either of those because we don't have any action to show for it at this point.
Okay. Thank you, Maria. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Minor, your hand is still up. I don't know if you just forgot to lower it or if you have something else you'd like to add.
Yeah, just one follow-up question. Thank you, Maria, for answering our questions and for presentation. Just following up on one item that Commissioner Gongora was raising on the rental assistance. Do we end up giving that out a complete payment for those who request it on a first-come, first-served basis, or was it a proportional based on the number of applicants?
No, sir. It's actually on a first-come, first-served. As of today, no one has completed the paperwork that they're required to do because they have to bring us a consent from the landlord, and the landlord has to register as a vendor. So that normally takes about 3 days for all of that to be resolved. So I don't have a check having been cut yet. That being said, sir, with regards to the rent assistance, I do want to mention that in as much as there were people that probably were scared away because they didn't meet the residency requirement, there were also quite a few people that came to us that had drained their bank accounts within the last couple of weeks but didn't pay rent. And so we're trying to hold people accountable that, well, what did you do with those $2,000 that you drained from your account? One of the good things about doing something that's good is that you're helping people in need. But at the same time, there are also a lot of people who take advantage of that, who try to access services that they otherwise wouldn't be entitled to. So our legwork on the due diligence has been a little more challenging because of things like that. But we are ensuring that everyone that as long as they work with us and provide the documentation and their landlord is in concurrence, we can turn things around within 7 days. So we're prepared. But as of today, we don't have anyone who is at a point of getting a check cut.
But I know at a previous meeting, I can't remember if it was a commission meeting or finance, there was some discussion about whether we should pay applicants in full on a first come, first serve, or since we pretty much rightly predicted that we were going to run out of funds, paying a percentage of the number of applicants. And this way everyone gets, maybe not as much, but everyone gets a little bit. What was the decision making there?
So the caveat is that these are federal funds. And so not everyone who comes in through the door is eligible. So that's the first issue. The second issue is that in order to release these federal funds, we must attach certain documentation that must be attached prior to us releasing. So doing it proportionally may not have achieved that. Whereas in this way, we're ensuring compliance to the federal funds. So if we get audited, we pass the audit and don't have to repay funds because we didn't comply with the rules. So that's the other issue. We had to balance compliance with the speed of service.
I'm going to open it up to the public to see if anybody has a comment on this particular item, but I see you, Michael, waving your hand.
Yeah, I don't know how to do electronic hand on my phone. I'm so sorry. As a follow-up though, Maria, I didn't hear an answer to the question that Commissioner Minor asked, and it's a very good one. I think we need to understand, if not today, on Friday when the item comes up, is it strictly first come, first serve? Are we opening a 2-week, 3-week, or 4-week window, and whoever applies and qualifies will divvy up the money best as we can? And we're not getting a clear answer from administration. So if you're not able to give that today, that's okay. But by Friday, we do need to know right. That answer.
Let me clarify. It's not first come, first served. It's first come, first qualified. they have to qualify under the federal guidelines before we can cut a check. So that it's not first come, first served. It's first come, first qualified is how the checks get cut.
Okay, so first come, first qualified. So that means the money is going to run out, even perhaps before people who currently have appointments even come in. And I don't like that aspect.
Well, if we use the 22 no-shows as a basis, our projections are on the money that only a certain percentage of people will actually qualify out of those 500. Because 22 no-shows just in the last, in the first 2 days is a factor. And on top of that, here we are beginning the third day. No one has come back with a complete package as of now. And they do come back in the afternoon to provide the documentation once we request it. So far, we don't have one file ready to go. Because again, it's compliance with the federal guidelines. That's the biggest challenge.
If there's something that we can do as a city to communicate better to people what the qualifications are, what you must bring to your first appointment, who qualifies, I think we need to do that, because I think there's just a message out in the community that there's money available and people are running around and frustrated. So besides the fact that we need to give your department the support it needs to take the calls, we need to make sure that we're communicating the requirements very clearly to people ahead of time.
So every person who received an appointment got an email that had this attachment. This attachment lists all of the documents that they're required to bring. We made it as clear and concise with samples so that people understood what those documents were. I think that the bigger issue has been from the 22 no-shows is that when they realize that in order to prove residency, they have to bring that government document, that is what those 22 no-shows, I think, represented. But everyone else, the substantive really has been, they either didn't bring their bank statements, all of them, or they missed pages, which we can't accept. We must accept a document in its entirety. And they have to come back and bring us those proper documents. But the truth is that everyone got this checklist. We walked through the process before we gave them an appointment to try to prepare them for this is what you're going to expect. This is what we're going to be doing. And this is what your landlord is going to be expected to do. So be prepared for that. And I think even as much as you prepare people, there's so much emotion. There's so much desperation. There's so much anxiety. I understand that for a lot of people, even though they check things, they didn't realize, oh, it said 3 months of bank statements and I only brought two. So part of it, I think, is also just taking into account that people are nervous and people have a lot of anxiety and they may be rushing through just because of that anxiety. And we understand that, which is why we factored that in when we scheduled their appointments and the callback time to bring the balance of the documents. It's a hard thing to do for anybody.
Commissioner, I don't know if you have anything else to add, but I'm looking forward to continuing this at Friday's commission meeting. So thank you. And again, I'm opening it up to the public. If anybody has anything they'd like to add on this particular item, let me see now if there's anybody from the public. Okay, I see one hand up. Daniel Beitia.
Good morning, Commissioner. Thank you so much for taking on this issue and this dialogue. I just wanted to say first, thank you to Maria's department. I know on top of what they're doing every day, they've been tasked with food distribution and then this rent assistance program, which if I'm not mistaken, they received like 2,000 calls on that first day. I understand it's a very limited amount of funds, and I know that there's certainly a lot of people in the community that are looking for some form of rent assistance. The state unemployment process is most certainly a failure for the most part. In speaking to so many residents that have applied for unemployment, they've just been unsuccessful in being able to access those federal funds that are out there as part of the CARES Act. So it is a sad situation, and that has resulted in a significant number of our residents unable to pay their rent. I just think the reality is that with the limited amount of funds available, there's such a limited amount of capacity for such a high demand. So I don't know that the commission has the ability to really fund that program. I know this is something we're looking to trickle down through the federal and state governments, and hopefully They make a decision that allows funds to come through, but I am certainly hopeful in the structure that Maria has created. And if we can get her more funding, I think she's doing a significant job managing the high demand that's been placed on her department. And most likely for the next 6 months in the foreseeable future, Maria's department will continue to have to adapt and innovate to the demands of the residents, most certainly. So thank you for taking this issue. Thank you, Maria, and for all your employees and to the commission. I appreciate your willingness. Now we need to focus on the ability, which really is those funding mechanisms that will trickle down. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next caller, Linda Sheldon, you have 2 minutes.
Now, okay. All right, am I unmuted now?
Yes.
Okay, all right, I'm sorry, this is not an issue really as important as the homeless, but I saw that this was about quality of life, and I have exhausted all possibilities of finding out why the pools in the condos are not open. The seniors are getting weaker and weaker by the day. I have written to everyone. I do not understand why hair coloring and pedicures are more important than seniors getting exercise. Vitamin D in the sun is what is important. Exercise for we seniors. I'm 87. My husband is 94. I have written more emails to more people, and all I want to know is why our condo pool is not open.
Thank you.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I just wanted to reiterate for Ms. Sheldon and those in the public that those pool regulations are part of the county order, and we are obviously very interested in continuing to work closely with the county to get things open, but we cannot be more lenient than they are. And so as long as the county is requiring those pools remain closed, the city of Miami Beach has no option.
Thank you, Eric. Any other callers for the item that we were just discussing regarding possible ways to improve our homeless situation in Miami Beach? All right, seeing none, we're going to move on to the next item, unless Commissioner Minor, you have anything else you'd like to add as we close this item. I'm sure you'd like to see it back at some point, as it's an ongoing item.
Correct. Yeah, let's just consider putting it on perhaps even the next meeting or the meeting after, because it is an ongoing item, and it's the facts change, especially now with COVID. It seems like the facts do change pretty quickly, so it would be helpful to get updates.
Okay.
In the light of the fact that we're probably going to have a heavy agenda next month, do you think it's possible to bring it back in two?
Works for me.
Fantastic. Thank you, sir.
And I know this is going to be discussed in finance as well, regarding the building facility. So there'll be discussion there as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for putting this on. I'm going to go on to the next item. Item number two, discussion regarding the addition of a three-way stop sign on Chase Avenue and 40th Street to improve pedestrian and vehicular safety. Is there anybody here from transportation? Commissioner Minor?
Sure, I'll tee it up why I put this on. I actually had a number of people reach out to me on this, including somebody who lives on that street on 40th and Chase. So if you can picture it, there's actually a couple of synagogues that are across the street, and there's a major parking lot. There's also the parking lot that's on the east side of 40th behind the Wells Fargo. There's also a shopping center sort of to the east of CVS. And so basically when you're crossing from west to east on 40th and Chase, there's no stop sign. And I've seen it personally, I've done it personally, where you're kind of just trying to navigate walking in the cars. And then when a number of residents reached out to me, including someone who lives on that block, who tells me that when he looks out his window, it's just, he's scared every time he sees the what's going on. I thought it'd be a good idea to put this on and see if we can if we can go. I know transportation. I see Jose, and I'll let him talk. I know there was going to have to be some traffic study, but I'll let Jose talk about that.
Jose.
Yes. Good morning, Madam Vice Chair, Commissioner Minor. We'd be more than happy to take a look at this intersection. You described it very accurately. Currently, it's free flow for north-south, and only 40th Street has a stop sign. Typically, the way that we handle these types of requests is that we collect data, and then we perform an in-house analysis, which is pretty quick. We could do it in a couple weeks. And then if based on the data that's collected, it appears that that intersection meets the warrant for an all-way stop control, we then pass that on to the county for implementation because by home rule charter, the county has jurisdiction over traffic control, even on local roads within municipalities, and that includes stop signs, traffic signals, roundabouts, and whatnot. So the only issue is that, as we all know, because of the pandemic, traffic volumes are at an all-time low. So collecting data, at this point in time, would probably not be valuable. The data would not be accepted by the county either. So we do need to wait for traffic volumes to normalize a bit before we can go out there and collect the data. The data includes pedestrian counts. It includes vehicular counts, bicycles as well. We look at accidents. Then we go from there. We make a determination based on that. It's a quick process, but we just need to wait for traffic to normalize a bit before we can go out there and collect data.
Okay. Commissioner Minor?
That seems to make sense. That's consistent with your memo. And I think if we did the study now, as you're predicting, it probably wouldn't properly reflect the traffic patterns that usually go on there, and it would be rejected. So there's no reason to go forward now. So I accept that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Commissioner Gongora.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything. I've also heard complaints about this intersection and think it warrants looking into. I agree, we're not going to get the data we need. So if you want to push it up for 3 or 4 months and bring it back when traffic patterns are flowing more normally.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Do we want to bring it back in a few months, or do we want to just get some direction to the staff that as soon as traffic normalizes, we'd like to do the study?
Yeah, I think
I think the latter, but it's Commissioner Minor's item, but rather than bring it back, I'd rather just give that direction to do it when traffic normalizes.
Agreed.
Okay,
Jose, bye. Are you okay with that?
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to move on. Oh, let me see if anybody from the public wishes to discuss the traffic on 40th. Seeing none, I'm going to move on to our final item. Item number 3, discussion regarding seaweed plan. Commissioner Gongora.
Thank you, Chair Steinberg. As you recall, we spent a lot of time on this issue last year at Neighborhoods Committee, and I put this on in anticipation of summer and things heating up. And I wanted to make sure that when our beaches finally reopen, that we do what we can to make sure that they are sargassum free and that people can enjoy them fully. So I wanted the administration to provide us with information about what they're doing or what they're collaborating with the county to do to control this potential sargassum situation.
Good morning, Commissioner. So obviously the city works alongside the county on the beach management and operation, and happy to report that this fiscal year to date, they've recovered or removed about 1,700 cubic yards of seaweed. That process will continue. The county last year entered into an agreement with Beach Raker for the seaweed removal services. We continue to maintain contact with them, and this is something that's part of their service levels during the seaweed season, if you will. Happy to discuss and answer any questions you may have, but I think they're doing a pretty good job, and we're working with them to make sure that beach is ready for our visitors.
wonderful. I can tell you when I walk on the beach walk, it looks gorgeous. I understand why people are anxious to get back on that, and I haven't noticed any accumulations of seaweed or sargassum seaweed, but just want to make sure we're proactive and continue to collaborate with the county more so than having questions. I'll open it up to my colleagues, but from my perspective, I would just like you to stay on top of this issue with the county and communicate with us via LTC if we need to take any commission action here.
Yes, sir. And we maintain direct contact with the county beach management operations supervisor daily. So we're out there every day. We're making sure those lifeguard towers look good, the beach walk, rope and pole. So that beach is pristine. That's a daily task for us.
Okay, thank you.
Any of my colleagues wish to comment or ask? Oh, Commissioner Minor.
Just a quick question. When is generally the worst time of year for the seaweed?
So they're hot. Their low season is February to April, and then their high season is towards the end of spring and into this time period. Betsy Wheaton here is here, and she can kind of get into the environmental portion of it. But we're right in that high season as we speak.
Hey, good afternoon, Commissioner Steinberg and commissioners. Yes, so right now we are working closely with the University of Miami's Rosenstiel School of Marine and Atmospheric Science. They have scientists at the school that are closely monitoring the sargassum that is developing south of the United States in the Gulf of Mexico. Right now, we're anticipating that the bulk of the seaweed that we'll see for this season will come in about mid-June to mid-July. So we'll continue to monitor that to see how that's changing. Questions that we've asked, are we going to see just one big hit during that time period, or will there be a few waves? And at this time, they don't have those answers, but we can expect that, we will start seeing in mid-June to mid-July another large amount of sargassum similar to what we saw in 2015 and last year as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Gongora, anything else you'd like to add?
I'm satisfied with the item. I'm happy to see that we are being proactive on this issue. Keep it up. And if you need us to take any formal action, just let us know via LTC, and I'm happy to take the item off the agenda.
Thank you so much. Okay, with that, let me see if anybody from the public would like to make any comment regarding this seaweed issue in Miami Beach. Nope, seeing none. Okay, so with that, thank you for that recommendation. I think that's fine. We don't need to make a motion. Eric, anything else we'd like to add or comment on before we adjourn?
No, I think we can say this was a successful first virtual meeting of the Neighborhoods Committee. Thank you, everyone, for your efforts. Thank you to the whole administration for everything that they're doing, keeping their day-to-day activities going while we're also adapting and adding the additional COVID responsibilities. So, great job, guys and girls.
Yes. With that, we'll see you in June for our next Neighborhood Quality of Life Committee, and see you on Friday for our commission meeting. Stay safe. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.